I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ron. Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone. I'm here with Mr. Murray McCormick, and we're here to discuss the Saskatchewan Roughriders, of course. They have clinched a home playoff game for the third straight season, I should point out, and that will be played November 28th. Against the Calgary Stampeders. Interesting season, though, Murr. They're 9-4, and they haven't won more games at the 13 game mark than this since 1970. But it doesn't feel like a 9-4 team. Does this team deserve its due? A lot of people, ourselves included, have been picking it apart. But 9-4 is pretty impressive when you consider that's the best that this franchise has done, and it's happened a handful of times. Since 1970.
It keeps at that feeling. You and I have both talked about it. After they win, it feels like a loss. Just because we go on all the social media and everything looks like, oh no, the end of the world. Their offensive line didn't do this. The kickers didn't. Well, the kickers always does what he's doing. No, Cody Fajardo didn't do this. The receivers didn't do that. And I kind of think, do you think maybe the Rider fans have been a little spoiled with the success that they expect to have not only a win, but style points for a win? And in the old days, you know, it wasn't, you won, and you moved on, and it was like stuff. But it just seems to be everyone has assessed style points for that. And right now, unfortunately, the guy who gets the most style points and attention isn't Cody Fajardo, isn't playing like he did in 19. And maybe that's fueling some of the negativity up there, Rob? Do you think it's just, or is it just an overall malaise about this team?
Like, you know, I'd like to address both points, which I think have a lot of validity. First of all, I think we are spoiled. And I kind of tuned myself in that way. 1978, 1979, 1980, I sat through all three of those seasons, went to every game, a lot of the road games as well. And over those three seasons combined, they had 8 victories and a tie. Over 3 years, over 48 games, they had 8 wins and a tie. And they've won more games than that at the 13-game mark in 2021. So as I look back at my 12, 13, and 14-year-old self, pardon me, my 14, 15, and 16-year-old self, and think of the days when even a Rider first down was a cause for celebration, they had 6 one day in Montreal in 79. I think people have been a little spoiled, and maybe they were spoiled a bit by 2019 and what happened with Cody Fajardo and the entire team. And I went off on that a bit in today's column, a bit in Saturday's column as well. I agree. Yeah, there's some things that Cody Fajardo can do better, and he's the first to acknowledge that, and he did acknowledge that when we spoke to him on Friday. But honestly, again, I go back to my younger self. I remember the seemingly endless gap between Ron Lancaster retiring and Kent Austin turning into a star. And over that period of time, there was an unquenchable thirst for anybody who could play quarterback reasonably well. I could go through a litany of names between Ronnie retiring after the 78 season and Ken Austin and Tom Burgess solidifying the quarterbacking in 1988. So you're talking a decade. And it was just one quarterback after another. Very rarely was there a sign that they had an answer at quarterback. The closest they came is in 1981 when John Huffnagel and Joe Barnes combined for 33 touchdown passes and were dubbed J.J. Barnagel. But that aberration of a season aside, people were starving for a quarterback who was even a fraction as competent as Cody Fajardo is in a year that isn't comparable in terms of performance to 2019. I would take Cody Fajardo this year over virtually anybody the Riders had over that decade, and I would take him. I would take him in a second right now. I think Cody Fajardo is a gift to this franchise, and on and off the field. And I think people should appreciate Cody Fajardo more instead of picking away at him and hacking away and just looking for the littlest thing to get on his case. But I listened to the Green Zone postgame show on Saturday, and there were people phoning in and complaining about Cody Fajardo. He threw three touchdown passes. One of them was a game winner. Like, honestly, like, what is it going to take to wake people up? This is silly.
How about this for a wake up? Take Cody Fajardo out of the Rough Riders, and where are they now? Like, and with, is Isaac Harker the guy? We don't know. We don't know who the quarterback is. We don't know who their quarterback would be. But take Cody Fajardo out of the Rough Riders, and they aren't, I don't think they're 9-4. Do you? I don't think they're this strong. I think Cody Fajardo's done the things that he's
done.
Well,
you know, we don't know. With Isaac, he may turn into a very good quarterback. But, I mean, there would be that a period of apprenticeship, and there's no guarantee that Isaac would blossom into a star as quickly as Cody Fajardo did in 2019, especially when he's playing behind that offensive line. So
I know that's another thing that people forget. He's not playing behind the great offensive line with certain Hall of Famers on it. Maybe Don Clark would be one, but
he throws a beautiful pass to Ricardo Lewis on the 5-yard line. The ball is dropped. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, this is getting so stupid. And I've made a big deal over the season about the Rough Riders' lack of proficiency with the deep ball compared to past seasons. A lot of people have, and Cody has addressed that as an issue himself after the first game in Calgary. He's not ducking any of this. He knows what the realities of the situation are, but let's cut him some slack. He's a quarterback of a team that's 9-4 for the second straight season.
And two home playoff games. Think about that.
And he hasn't had a first-rate receiving corps for most of the season. They haven't had much of a ground game for most of the season, and the offensive line is sieve-like. So, and the play calling is suspect. So, is Cody Fajardo the problem, or are his occasional lapses in performance symptomatic of a problem? I would suggest the latter.
But how's he going to shake these things off now? They have Hamilton on the weekend, which is a meaningless game for the Riders. It has some meaning. Tiger Cats are still going for playoff positioning, and then I still think he has to step it up in the playoffs. So we can't be using, I think he's done well and you take him out of the equation and it's scary, but he's got to find a better way to be a little more consistent in the playoffs. Don't we think
that?
That's hinging upon the offensive line actually being able to block Calgary, which we saw was pretty rare in that 3-game set, that even the game the Riders won, that the offensive line still struggled. But don't you think the offensive line played a little bit? I know it's Edmonton, but they played a little better.
They had some semblance of a running game.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I asked Craig about that. You know, what do they do? Are they going to get a running game going? And it's just like, I don't know, it's supposed to be pretty wintry now. Of course, it's going to be wintry. You got to have a running game. You've got to be able to give William Powell the ball and let him know that he's going to run it down their throats when they expect it, which I love. That's a phrase I love. The best thing in the CFL is you got to be able to run the ball when they expect you to run the ball. And the Riders don't do that, though, very well. So I don't know what they're going to do.
But
arguably not very well.
One of the weapons the Rough Riders have, and it's, I mean, Cody Fajardo has run a fair bit this season. He's in the top 10 in the league in rushing yardage. But I would think come playoff time, it's almost a two-headed monster when you look at the Rough Rider running game. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cody Fajardo carried the ball as often as William Powell in the playoffs. What are you saving it for? And Cody Fajardo gives that offense a dimension and certainly a desire that I think a lot of teams would like to have. So once the playoffs come and you're not, I mean, Cody didn't run a lot this past game against Edmonton.
Didn't really have
playoff time. you know, it didn't really have to, but come playoff time, I think you're going to see Cody Fajardo taking off, perhaps out of necessity, but I think more often out of design. And that's a dimension that the Rough Riders offense, I think, can really emphasize during the playoffs. And that keeps defenses off balance. And so, you know, he's certainly not reluctant to run, but I think come playoff time, you're going to see Cody Fajardo taking off a lot. And hopefully for the Riders' sake, for the right reasons.
I also think, you know, the performance of Duke Williams has got to foster a little more optimism around here. And I know it was against Edmonton, a team that's been struggling, but boy, he looked like the guy. I was thinking 2000 and was it 19 or 18? I'm sorry, I guess 2018, when he was that dominant force.
2018
with the Eskimos. Can we say Eskimos in 18? Yeah.
I just say Edmonton now.
Edmonton now, yeah. But he was such a dominant force. And he was another one again on Saturday. He was just like, it was Cody's favorite target. It looked really serious when he got that tackle, and it looked like his leg was caught right underneath him. And then four plays later, he's back on the field and running around. I'm not quite sure if he caught another pass after that play.
No, but by halftime, he already had the Riders' highest receiving yardage total of the season. 115 yards at halftime. The previous high for a game was 107 by Keon Schaefer-Bates.
And every catch was a highlight catch. There wasn't one, oh, that's a ho-hum catch. Yeah. Everyone was pretty good.
That's what
showed off his hands.
That's why they signed him. So by all means, rest him on Saturday against Hamilton. By all means, rest Cody. I think Dan Clark has been playing hurt all year. He deserves a break. Shaq Evans, I think, can use a week off. I would give William Powell a rest, see what Jamal Morrow can do in the backfield. I realize you can only rest so many people, but they've had some players who have played through a lot this year. And I would certainly seize every opportunity to give them a bit of a break. I think I'd give A.C. Leonard a break as well. Even Micah Johnson, you look at, they've got so many defensive linemen. I think they've got an opportunity to maybe rest some of the older ones. I would, you know, Micah Johnson's 33 years old. I would definitely rest him. I would definitely rest A.C. Leonard. You know, maybe Deion Lacey, a middle linebacker, so valuable. But they lost four guys in a pre-training cramp workout. Given the luck this team, or lack thereof, this team has had with injuries, I'm not risking anything in a meaningless game. I mean, if it means that Craig Dickinson's got to play safety, fine. I mean, just rest people, and when you have the opportunity.
I found it interesting that Craig mentioned after the game Saturday about salary cap implications, which is true, because we just think you just put a guy down and he's down, you bring another guy up, and you don't have. But all these guys you talk about dropping are going to go down onto the probably the one game injury list, so they still get their salaries. The guys who come up get paid, so you don't have that freedom, as much freedom as the nine or ten names you named there, Rob, which would all are very wise things to sit. But it's not like the NFL where they have so unlimited room to move.
No, I think but what there's you can
a lot, do, a lot of juggling, but you have to figure it out.
Let's say you have to dress Duke Williams or Shaq Evans. Okay, fine. Run the ball 50 times a game. Have Cody hand off every play. I mean, it may sound absurd, but do whatever you can to minimize the risk of injury to your key players, because that could bring the whole house down. One thing that's going to be topical this week, Murr, the Rough Riders Awards Rough Riders nominees for the CFL Player Awards are going to be announced. I weighed in my column in Tuesday's best-selling edition of the Leader Post as far as who I think should win. I'd be interested in your thoughts, being that you actually have a vote. Because you're a member of Local Reporters of Canada, and I'm not. So most outstanding player, I think it's A.C. Leonard.
I think it's Cody Fajardo. I think, and I've stated that a little earlier, you take him out of the Riders roster, regardless of all the interceptions and things that he's done wrong, I don't think they have anything. I don't think they're even close to being what they are now. So I had Cody Fajardo first and A.C. Leonard. I think I had A.C. Leonard second.
Most outstanding defensive player? That's A.C. Leonard. Luchez Purifoy's had a tremendous year. I think there's a lot of people who have had a tremendous year. Jonathan Woodard is leading the league in sacks. At least he was last time I checked. I didn't see what happened this past weekend. I didn't check the sack totals for this past weekend, but he has 10 sacks after his first 13 CFL games. I think Deion Lacey's had a good year.
Yeah.
I think Micah Johnson's had a good year. Ed Gainey's had a good year. Nick Marshall, even though he's susceptible at times to giving up a completion of some note, Nick Marshall's had a good year. But
Leonard.
Consistently, game in, game out, when he's available, A.C. Leonard is the most impactful player on that defense, and I would submit on the team as well.
Okay, and Canadian, and Mike then it gets pretty easy.
You could talk about him as the most outstanding defensive player candidate, and Mike Tights is my choice for the Riders.
Yes, we agree on
most
that.
Most outstanding Canadian. Who else is in the running?
I had Brett Lowther as second in that group.
Yeah.
I think he's, not Logan Frillin was a bit of a guy, and Keon Schrieffer-Baker was another one, but I think Lowther has been...
Reid Lenius, too, has had a nice year.
Yeah, but Lowther's been money. He's been consistent, and I think if Micah Tyson didn't have such a big year, that he'd be my first vote overall if it wasn't for Brett for the season that Micah Tyson is having it. And it's great to see a young guy do that. Like, great to see the draft come through, see a guy come with patience, learn from three of the best linebackers we might have seen in a long time here around in 2019 with Solly and Cameron Judge and Derek Moncrief. So good for Micah Tyson. I'm assuming he was going to get that one. Offensive line, boy, some head scratching there. I went with Dan Clark.
I picked Dan Clark.
We're just not counting any of the Calgary games in there.
I mean, he is game in, game out. I mean, he's the quarterback of the offensive line. He's playing a crucial position. He's been playing hurt a lot of the year. It hasn't been a banner year for the line as a whole, but I think Dan Clark is the anchor of that unit. They've had issues with tackle for most of the year. Logan Ferland's had a nice year considering the position he was thrown into. Evan Johnson had some struggles early, it seemed, but since then he's stabilized his game. But I'm still going with Dan Clark. I'm not doing that with a lot of confidence because I don't think any of the offensive linemen have really had a tremendous year. But you got to pick somebody, and Dan Clark seems to be the guy there. You?
And second is Logan Ferland. Yeah, I agree with Dan Clark. And second is Logan Ferland, too. So, and also remember, as I think you might have mentioned, Dan Clark's, I think he's playing through a lot of injuries. He's a banged-up guy, and he's a leader on that team. You see, I'm at practice. I see him do things out there. He's the best. He's the top offensive lineman, without a doubt. Special teams, Lowther.
Yeah.
And then I tried to hunt to find somebody else, and I came up with Jake Hardy, who had, when I did my list, had 9 special teams tackles. He hasn't really contributed as a receiver, but he's contributed all 4 teams. So he's always only the second guy, but it's something to keep in mind. Keenan LaFrance is another guy who's done, doesn't have the numbers, but contributes on all 4 facets of special teams. So you got to keep in mind, but There's no one better than special teams, better than Brett Lowther right now.
Jorgen Hoos is notable because he's never notable. He doesn't blow any snaps. And so the long snapper, Jorgen Hoos, has had a nice year. And so
Ever heard of a long snapper being nominated for Canadian? I don't think, or even special teams. Not very often.
But he does his job perfectly, and nobody talks about him, which is basically the definition of doing your job perfectly as a long snapper.
Exactly.
Most outstanding rookie, I think that's a pretty easy one. It's Keon Schrieffer-Baker. And that's pretty much a no contest.
And Logan Ferland's a distant second, but give him an opportunity. The guys, when Brendan Labatt retired, Brendan mentioned that Logan Ferland was a guy that can step up. And boy, the Thunder's been pretty good to the Riders. And you think of Dan Clark and Logan Ferland coming in through there, and way back in the day, Zach Evans. So
Stu Ford,
good for the Thunder. The Thunder produce these guys, not huge numbers, but the guys they send up here do contribute, and so that's a good thing on them.
Do any of the Riders have a chance at the divisional or league level?
Maybe Micah Tights, maybe. But I think I was trying to think of the linebacker from the BC Lions, the middle linebacker.
Jordan Williams.
Isn't he Canadian?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be a tough one to beat.
Jordan Williams is going to be a tough one to beat out. I don't see that a lot of them have the potential to advance beyond the team nomination here.
How about, and it's not part of this voting period, though, a coach of the year. Do you think it's O'Shea? Or does Craig Dickinson get credit for, really, when we start back to that first Thursday before training camp even opened, and the whole team blew up and injuries and injuries and injuries, and, it's got him the 9 wins.
To extract 9 wins from a team that's faced this much adversity this year, I think, is admirable. Mike O'Shea might be penalized by the fact that he's the coach of a defending Grey Cup champion. Usually the coach of the year goes to somebody who I think his team has maybe exceeded expectations or has kind of had an ascent based upon the previous year. It's tough to have an ascent if you're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers because you won the Grey Cup in 2019. Maybe it's tough to have an ascent if you're Craig Dickinson because you're 9-4 and you were 9-4 at the 13-game mark in 2019 and you ended up winning 13 games and finishing first in the West. But when you look at what the Rough Riders have been able to get out of what they have, I think there's a very good case for Craig Dickinson as coach of the year. He should absolutely certainly be a finalist.
And another, they don't give it away in the CFL, an executive of the year. I don't think general managers and personnel guys get recognized enough for what they do. But I would like to recognize what J.O.'s done with the Riders, with 18 guys on the injured list and dealing with, we go back to that Thursday, dealing with that Thursday and then all the injuries. I think J.O. would be a...
They still haven't been able to fix the offensive line, though. That's the one thing that that has gone unaddressed. Is being able to, I mean, they knew they needed to upgrade the receiving core. In comes Duke Williams. The offensive line was an obvious area of need, and they've not gone in the direction of looking for reinforcements. So I would submit that if the offensive line continues to be porous, that's not a check in the box beside Jeremy O'Day's name or that of Paul Jones. But overall, I think it's an admirable job.
I think they've recognized that by they know that that's an issue. And I think,
yeah, so where's a new tackle? Where's a new guard? You know,
COVID makes it tough. You know,
makes it tough, but you know, that COVID didn't deter the Calgary Stampeders from being able to bring back Reggie Begelton and Trey Roberson. It didn't deter the Rough Riders from being able to sign Duke Williams. It hasn't deterred teams from bringing in players, period. So why should that be a deterrent as far as trying to reinforce the offensive line? We have to take a break here, and we will be back very shortly with more Rider rumblings or Rider grumblings, depending upon our mood. So stay with us, and we'll be right back, and there might be a cameo of my dog. As promised or threatened, we are back.
Yes,
and it's going to be a cameo of my dog because Candy is so cute. Look at her. Oh. She was laying at the end of the bed. A pillow fell on her, and she just fell asleep. She's absolutely the cutest dog ever, and I love her. So that was our Candy cameo, our Candio. Looking ahead, maybe we're being too dismissive of the Hamilton game, but, I mean, yeah, they're playing Hamilton Saturday at 3. Have a nice time. November 28th, 3:30 p.m., Calgary Stampeders are at Mosaic Stadium. Oddly enough, the first appearance for Bo Levi Mitchell as a starter against Saskatchewan in a playoff game. He played a handful of plays in 2013 after Kevin Glenn, after Drew Tate, when the Rough Riders defeated Calgary in the West Final in 2013.
All right, well, I didn't know that.
He had some mop-up duty that day.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Because it was, I think it was 35-13 was the final score. So there was lots of mopping up to do. But this is so cool. We know what it's been like for Henry Burris to come into Saskatchewan in games of, you know, do or die games. And Bo Levi Mitchell coming in, that's just an absolute. It's almost got a UFC kind of kind of vibe to it. It's going to be so cool.
I think it's, and we got to give Calgary credit. They're playing well. From the team that started out, what were they one time, 1-5 or 2-5, I think, at one point of the season, somewhere around there? Something like that. Well, we should check on that.
Helped to revive their season.
The Riders did. And then, but since then, they got healthy and fat on the Riders and stuff. But boy, they're playing well. Begelton had a big game, you know, and he looked like he almost got hurt towards the end of that one, too. Trey Robinson gives him another incredible coverage cornerback. And this, what a great offensive line. Kareem
Perry's here, and I had a nice year.
Nice year. And he's a guy the Riders have had problems with tackling. You know, that's a That's why they have nine defensive linemen on their rosters, because they're number one against the run, but Carey's made himself look pretty good against them. So that's going to be a tough one.
And against a lot of people, the Riders were kind of a catalyst for the type of season that Kadeem Carey has had, at least over the second half. Mike Rose has been hurt, and they're not sure about his status. And he's such a factor, especially against the Rough Riders this year. And Calgary's been able to rush four linemen and do so effectively against
three. Even three.
Yeah, Mike Rose was a key part of it there, but he's got some healing time too. Calgary team, you know, when you look at their pedigree and you look at Dave Dickinson and John Huffnagel, they're not your typical third place team coming in for a West Division semifinal. That's a very formidable team, and you have to respect what they've done and what they might do.
They talk about the crowds being such a factor. Do you think it's going to be a big enough crowd to be a factor? Like, do we look at last week's Saturday's game where they said 26,000 and it didn't look like that was generous, to say the least?
Yeah, you wonder too. I mean, they sold out their home playoff game in 2019, but they didn't do it in 2018. They didn't do it in 2013. They didn't do it in 2010. Three out of the last four Rider home playoff games have not been sold out. And there's no precedent for a November 28th home Rough Rider game. None.
Yeah.
The last time the Riders played on November 28th was 1976. And that was Tony Gabriel Day. Okay. But that was in Toronto. And actually, it was actually a nice day that day. I was there. Little damp. But, it was just kind of chilly. You know how Toronto is? But it was above zero. It was a fine day until 20 seconds remained in the 76 Grey Cup. But who knows what the weather might be like. We are recording this on a Tuesday morning, I'm looking out the window and the trees are swaying and we're on the precipice of our first winter storm.
One last week, Rob. You slept through
our first really, you know, genuine
scary one,
winter storm in Regina. So what might the weather be like on November 28th? We might maybe we get a break and it's a nice day, but chances are that it's going to be a negative temperature. And if the wind is a factor at all, it just gets exponentially colder. So I think the climate is going to dictate the crowd size.
They could also use nicer weather leading up to the game. So people think, oh, it looks like it's going to be nice. I'm going to buy my tickets and walk up, because the walk-ups are the gravy for the Rough Riders. So if it's reasonably nice leading up to the game, maybe that impacts how many people actually go to the game.
If there's gravy at a Rough Rider game, it probably costs $12.
Sorry.
If there's gravy at a Rough Rider game, it probably costs $12. Cost of concessions there being what it is. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. That's a good one. I like that.
It's uproariously funny.
I don't want to touch. What do you think about the double headers on Friday and Saturdays? Like, I really like the way the CFL is staying away from Sunday. I'm going to
miss Sunday. I wish they do the playoffs.
Sunday. Well, I'm trying to remember which year I covered a Saturday playoff game, and I'm trying to wonder if it was 2008.
I think it was 2007 they had a Saturday?
I wasn't around yet, so I think it might have been two.
Yeah, they did try that, and they veered away from it.
It was just the crowd was horrible, and it was in – I'll look it up, and I'll find it out for the next one. But I remember the crowds were horrible. Just everything felt out of sync. And I kind of – I like the way to play the regular season with the doubleheaders. I'm not as big a fan as the tripleheaders as some people are. I think doubleheader on a Friday, doubleheader on a Saturday is enough football for the season. And then – because this weekend, the NFL was pretty entertaining this weekend, and I ended up glued to the couch.
Not if you're a Denver Bronco fan, but
well, not if you, well, it was half entertaining for the Steelers. The glass
How
was
about
half.
Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, he's a dear.
Well, so, who is Jeannie Bouchard's boyfriend? Did you know?
I was hoping to see we'd see her on TV though. But anyway, I think I always kind of thought the CFL has got to show pride in its product and take on the NFL on Sundays with the regular season. I think they made the right decision to back off, give the NFL Sundays. I still think people are going to go to playoff games in the CFL on a Sunday. I think there's enough sort of entrenched interest in it to do that. But, you know, if it shows up, the crowds are bad again or don't look that strong. But, you know, as Craig Reynolds has said, we did a story back in May about this. It's not just the Riders who have problems with people going to playoff games. It's Sinvach across the whole league. That when they have playoff games, not a lot of people go to them. Not to say a lot, but they aren't sold out. And it's been kind of a thing for the CFL for a while. So,
but I mean,
we'll see what happens.
They can do themselves some favors as far as creating some intrigue too. Coaches live in fear of bulletin board material, etc. But honestly, if you want to, what does the UFC do? What does boxing do? You malign your opponent. You do things to create hype. So all it would take is for, say, Craig Dickinson to say something uncomplimentary about his brother and incite a family feud. That maybe that makes things interesting. Riders to, you know, come out and say we're gonna you know, sack Bo Levi Mitchell 15 times or he's coming into our house now, or do something to inflame the rivalry. Maybe Bo Levi will do that on his end and say something that stokes the fires here. But that's marketing. Teams are so, and you see it all the time during the Stanley Cup playoffs and even the Western Hockey League playoffs, where teams are so reluctant to say anything that might inflame the opposition. But guess what? That creates intrigue, that creates buzz, and that creates ticket sales. And now they've got 2 weeks to try and sell this game. Maybe it's time to start saying some things that might get people revved up about going to this game, as opposed to, we respect them, they're a fine opponent, blah, blah, blah. That's not going to sell anything except coffee to maybe keep you awake. Okay. So
wake up, Rob. Wake up from your dream world.
Oh, I know. But that's marketing. That's hyping the product. You know, they don't get it.
Yeah, I think it was Patrick Leville said a few things about the Blue Bombers that were minor sort of inflammatory before they played the Alouettes, played the Blue Bombers, but it didn't.
Speaking of statements, there was the matter of the certain choice word uttered by an official shortly before the second half on Saturday. What do you make of this?
Well, first off, I think people
clean.
People have to realize that you and I didn't know anything of that was going on because we didn't hear it in the press box.
I saw it on Twitter. People started going nuts on that on Twitter.
That's when I started to see it too. I would like to hear more about the context.
I'd like to know the context. Why was that said? Yeah, it was an illogical time for that to be said. Yeah. Saskatchewan's calling a timeout, bleep them. What is it about them calling a timeout that would probably...
Well, I think the fact that it's unprecedented that no one calls a timeout before the kickoff in the second half of a game. And I think maybe the officials were a little bit, I don't know. I don't understand why. That's the problem, is I listened and I've watched it again and again. And I go, well, why is he saying that? Like,
yeah, timeout? It just seems like a non sequitur in a way.
Yeah, maybe.
The greater concern for me, if you're a Rough Rider fan, the greater concern for me wouldn't be the fact that that was said on a hot mic. It would be that the team was tardy in getting out of the dressing room in time to put the right people on the field at the appropriate time for the second half kickoff. And Craig Dickinson said, well, there were some players in the bathroom. So here we go again with bathroom talk. We had the AC Leonard issue earlier this year. Now it's... At one point, you had a player who couldn't go to the bathroom, and now it seems that there's too many players who are actually going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So, honestly, where does it stop with... I better try to get myself out of this one without saying anything really silly. It's been such a goofy year that way. And I've never seen that. I haven't seen that. I've covered a ton of high school football. I haven't seen that happen. How does that happen to a professional football team?
With a clock that's a size, it's a huge clock counting down. And I know some people are saying maybe that, as Craig suggested, there's some gastronomic problems with the guys. But if it's the two, we don't know who they are, but it sounds like it's a couple of veterans who are usually pretty good at timing this stuff. So I don't know. It's just... And the CFL, like, what can they do? They can maybe fine them. We probably won't find that out until they come up with their discipline thing on Thursday.
They put out that tweet, that
apology right away.
Apology, but it, is there anything beyond that?
We know what officials are like. I'll bet you that official is kicking himself up and down the field right now. Hot mic, sometimes we can discuss it. The mic's always hot, eh? What are they taught up, taught? It's always hot. And you have to watch it. And maybe that official just all the officials have got a reminder of. But as I said before, I want to hear the context, and I don't know the context, and maybe Craig can expand on that. Maybe he knows what it was all about, but I don't think he was aware of it either till after the game.
Yeah, I think he had bigger concerns at the time, such as why aren't these players on the field ready for the second half kickoff? And, you know, especially Craig Dickinson tends to be pretty careful with his timeouts and to flush one away, perhaps literally in that case. that would be a concern. There's one criticism of Craig Dickinson I have. It is that the game management sometimes isn't the best, and the use of timeouts isn't the best. His hand was probably pretty much forced in this situation because he didn't have enough players, but they have clock management issues, and that's been the only thing under Craig Dickinson, and there's been a lot more victories than losses under Craig Dickinson, but it's the clock management.
Yeah.
When there is an issue, it seems to pertain to that, and the Rough Riders came out of it unscathed on Saturday. They won the game. They clinched the home playoff game, and no damage was done, but they cannot afford some clock management issues in the playoffs. The importance of those and perhaps the cost is magnified.
Yeah. All right, Rob. Well, I have to go brave the howling winds of Saskatchewan, the winds of November. Come early. I think I won't sing the Edmund Fitzgerald for you people. I'll save you from that one.
Does that song ever end?
Well, I know. You should hear the Headstones version of it, though. They know how to rock away.
You always give me a rough time about the jazz songs never ending. And yeah, John Coltrane has some 28-minute saxophone solos. But I once attended a jazz concert that had one song. They played for 41 minutes. It was Terrence Blanchard. They played for 41 minutes. They played the Melka X Suite, and they left the stage. So 141-minute song. But how did I get on that tangent?
Because
I think I should write this down. Here's another Candy cameo. Look at her. Oh, isn't she the cutest little darling?
She's a bundle of joy, a little sweetie. She makes my teeth hurt. She's so cute. And
Candy is the Regina Humane Society's calendar pooch.
Yeah, I saw that. That was a great picture. Yeah.
So get your Regina Humane Society calendar. It's $10, and it's available at virtually any pet store, certainly at the Regina Humane Society, and all that money goes to supporting the wonderful people and the wonderful programs and the amazing dogs and cats and various furry creatures at the Regina Humane Society. Candy's a rescue dog, and we absolutely love her. I'm going to try to rescue this podcast now by...
Let's do the outro. Is it an outro?
I guess it's an outro, it's called. That is broadcasting lingo. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. Thanks to Candy, it's also a podcast. It helps us grow the podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Products, Google Podcasts. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. I get them on my iPhone. Is that Apple Podcasts? I guess so. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email me. My name is Rob, and it's at rvanstone@postmedia.com. And we'll read it on the show, unless it's mean. You can also follow me, that's at Rob Vanstone, or Murray at Murray LP. Murr,
all right.
Thanks so much, and we'll do this again next week. Really getting serious then about the Rough Riders versus Calgary. This will be fun.
No fooling around, no jokes, no candy stuff. We're playoff mode. Maybe not.
There'll be lots of candy. Calgary starts with C, ends with Y. Candy starts with C, ends with Y. It all fits. For Murray McCormick, I'm Rob Vanstone on behalf of Candy, and thanks. We'll do this again next week.
That gave me pause for thought, Rob. Thank you.